right, everybody, welcome back. We got another amazing guest here on the Crypto 101 podcast. I'm your host, Bryce. As always, joined by my notorious compadre, Mr. Brendan Veman. Brendan, how are you doing today?
Bryce, I am doing fantastic. We are in a post-halving environment, and I could not be more stoked about it.
Immaculate, you know,
I'm feeling
vibes.
Good. Immaculate, it's like when you hit 18, you feel like a grown-up, you're in that next stage of life. Well, that's how we are in the post-Bitcoin halving environment over here. We are in the next stage of Bitcoin's evolution, and thus, the next stage of cryptocurrency's evolution as a whole.
Yeah, you are spot on, man. It is a whole new world. I mean, it's been 4 years. Obviously, we're recording this just, you know, a couple days after the halving that occurred. It was a big, you know, hoopla. Me and Brendan live streamed on YouTube. I think there's been something like 4,000 or 5,000 people that have watched that live stream now at this point. And I popped a bottle of Vuv. We had a lot of fun. It was a really exciting moment because it was really the light at the end of the tunnel after what was really a long bear market all throughout 2022, kind of the first half of 2023. People always pointed to the beacon of hope, kind of the light at the end of the tunnel. It was always the halving, right? The halving always gets us out of the worst bear markets. And sure enough, here we are. We hit a new all-time high before the halving, which now this is the fourth halving, and it's the first time that we've ever hit a new all-time high before the halving. So people are really excited. I think that fact right there is evidence of just kind of the demand that's coming into the market, that the market can't even contain itself. The market's tripping over itself to get exposure to this new asset class, and it's primarily the big money. It's primarily the folks that haven't had the opportunity to enter the crypto space at scale with ease, the institutions, right? And these institutions right now, their flows are, you know, being, you know, primarily coming in through these Bitcoin ETFs, which just launched. And you saw, I mean, there was, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars a day for weeks on ends of inflows and inflows into this new asset class, right? Digital currency. WisdomTree was one of the issuers of one of these Bitcoin ETFs that has just been wildly successful. We're bringing actually on a gentleman from WisdomTree today, not to talk about the ETFs particularly, but to talk about all of the other stuff that WisdomTree is doing here in the crypto space. They are a, you know, billion, you know, multi-billion dollar asset manager. And TradFi sort of institution, they're making waves in the crypto space. So there is going to be a lot to talk about. Clearly, I'm really excited about Jason Guthrie, who's the head of digital asset products at WisdomTree Prime. Jason, thanks for joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm really well, guys. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Yeah, man, there's a lot going on. How did you celebrate the halving? Let me just start things off there. Did you pop a bottle of Vuv?
Not a bottle of Vuv, but I had a beer and then got back to work.
There you go. Somebody's got to do it, right? No, cool. So look, you as we were catching up before this show, I mean, your background is expansive in finance, in digital assets. You are the guy for the job. So before we talk about actually what WisdomTree is, what you guys are doing, we actually want to get to know you. Tell us a little bit about your background. And what got you to being the head of products for digital assets, which is, I think, you know, the coolest job at any traditional financial firm? How'd you land this and kind of what got you into it?
Have you ever wanted to trade Bitcoin but haven't dared tried? With Plus 500 Futures, you can trade crypto without the hassle of opening a wallet. With just a few clicks, you can register and start practicing with their free and unlimited demo. See a trading opportunity? You'll be able to trade in just two clicks. Feel ready? You can move to real money with as little as $100 once your account is approved. And the great thing is that in addition to crypto, Plus 500 gives you access to a wide range of instruments like the S&P 500, NASDAQ, gas, and much more. Explore equity indices like energy, metals, Forex, and beyond. With a simple and intuitive platform, you can trade anytime, anywhere. Experience the fast, accessible futures trading you've been waiting for with Plus 500. With over 20 years of experience, Plus 500 is your gateway to the markets. Visit us.plus500.com to learn more. Trading in futures involves risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify, and this is not personal financial advice. Plus 500, it's trading with a plus.
Yeah, sure. So my background is, look, I come from traditional finance. I've worked in sort of banks and asset managers my whole career, primarily in ETFs, right? That's WisdomTree's a big ETF sponsor, and that's how I came here. I used to be head of capital markets for the European operations. I did something similar at Deutsche Bank kind of prior to that. I was lucky enough to have a close friend of mine that was really into Bitcoin early on. A guy with like a technology cybersecurity background. And, you know, I think this is a similar story to a lot of people's. I used to be a skeptic of blockchain, of Bitcoin, of kind of the whole space. And as I say, I was lucky enough to have this friend that, you know, just persisted with me until I eventually, you know, read the white paper and dug into things thinking I was going to like prove him wrong, and then became a complete convert to it. And I think a lot of people have a very similar story to that. So, you know, I started getting really interested in it personally, doing a lot of research into, as you say, starting with Bitcoin, but very quickly going down the rabbit hole of Ethereum smart contracts and kind of seeing the potential for what this could do for financial markets, removing intermediaries, driving efficiencies. You know, an internet for value transfer as opposed to information transfer is a really, really exciting thing if you're a nerd about, you know, financial logistics like I am. From there, you know, I was lucky enough that WisdomTree is an innovative, forward-looking company. We're still founder-led, despite the fact we're, you know, publicly listed and been around a long time. And we're always trying to push the edges on innovation. So I was lucky enough that there were a handful of projects that were relating to the space that I got to be involved in, helped structure a range of tracker products for the European business, like, you know, similar to the ETFs that have launched in the US, but, you know, looking at Bitcoin, Ethereum, we built a few indices, launched a few baskets, as well as made a few strategic investments in the space. And from there, sort of the ambition and appetite at WisdomTree to do more and more just grew. And, you know, I was lucky enough to be in on the ground floor and help them structure and drive these early projects, which we've now turned into a whole new division at the company. And I'm lucky enough to lead the product outfit for them.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to get started in crypto is to come in from the lenses of a skeptic, because then you really get to understand the technology and why you believe what you believe and why you put your hard-earned money behind it, right? You know, a lot of people come in with blind faith and they're like, oh, I've heard about this Bitcoin thing. It seems good. Maybe I'll put money into it. But really understanding the thesis behind like why this is now one of the fastest growing trillion-dollar asset classes in history. And so, you know, one of the things that I took note of is that you said prior to your current position, you know, you are one of the head guys that was spearheading crypto ETPs over in Europe. So did you come across anything that like really stood out to you during that time? Maybe it's like a cool metric or different kinds of adoption that stood out to you. Like what was some of your favorite findings during that time period?
I think one of the most interesting things that we kind of realized when we were doing this was, you know, a lot of the questions and skepticism that you get from investors when it comes to this focus on like it's about the security or about, you know, what Bitcoin's getting used for. Is it nefarious purposes on the internet, those sort of things? But a lot of that ends up, I think, being a lot of quite a big red herring in terms of like what people's like real objections are. I think most of it comes down to like either they just haven't had exposure and don't want to look at it, or I think more fundamentally, there's an access problem for these type of things. Mm-hmm. Every time something new comes along, it might be great, but if they don't know how to go about getting into it and how to do, you know, like even the basic things with the asset class itself, people, you know, don't put the effort in to kind of do it. And I think that was one of the big initial problems or hurdles to adoption that we sort of solved by launching these tracker products is it enabled people to get exposure with their like completely existing process, right? So the same, you know, trading flow, the same like risk management reporting, things that are really important to like that institutional space. It let mm-hmm. them take exposure to the asset class that way. And we found that it was like a really good gateway for, okay, well, I can get exposure. It's been well performing. Now I have a little bit of a grasp of the technology. Like what else can we do with it? And I think that that was a really powerful kind of realization for me is like making these things accessible and understandable is kind of the key to getting it out there into the world.
Totally. No, and I think you know, WisdomTree, I mean, as an ETF business, it's really the perfect business to be at the forefront of crypto. You know, it's two innovative technologies that are both emerging. I mean, if you look at the flows from, you know, traditional finance, where are all the traditional finance flows going? They're from mutual funds to ETF funds, right? And so then if you look at, like, you know, crypto, it's just like this kind of liquidity black hole that's just a one-way sort of street. Yep. People kind of come in and they don't really ever leave. It's Hotel right. California. And so being at the marriage of both that, it's a great business. So I'm curious about the history, you know, WisdomTree's history with crypto. Yep. Have you been there since the start of WisdomTree's history with crypto? Did you lead those efforts? Did you kind of come on as an additional, you know, kind of partner? Is that they've already been doing it for a long time? Is this their first foray? Just give us a little history.
Yeah, no. So look, I've been there since day one. I love what you just said there about, you know, flow of funds going from mutual funds to ETFs and now what comes next. The genesis of our whole blockchain tokenization crypto journey came from a question posed by our founder, which was like, we saw this technology. He's like, can this do to ETFs what ETFs did to mutual funds? That's right. The genesis of how we got into it as a company. So exactly what you've just hit on, that's exactly where we came from. And from that sort of all of this kind of sprung, you know, it really did start with small projects, like looking about how we could get access, how we could provide access to the major cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, Ethereum, those were the tracker products. We also, you know, took a really, really keen interest early on in tokenization, and because that's like there's a direct corollary between what ETFs did to mutual funds and what tokenization has the potential to do. The thing that I really love about that ETF story was, you know, I think the reason that it was as successful is not the one that most people talk about, right? Everybody talks about, you know, intraday trading, that was this huge, you know, technology improvement over what mutual funds used to do. But I don't actually think that that's it. Like the biggest thing here was access. If you had an online brokerage account, you got access to any ETF listed in that ecosystem because it was really just leveraging the equities market technology, right? You got access to any ETF that existed and from any issuer that ever had existed or ever would exist in the future. Previously, mutual funds got away with charging like 2 and 20 because they really like restrained your access to just their platform, just their products. So they weren't pushed. And I think this is also why, because people have better access, they have way more choice. Issuers have been forced to innovate on the metrics that matter to consumers, which is price and product innovation. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that really aggressively happen through the ETF space, driving down costs, putting out more product, doing more innovative products. I see the same thing with tokenization. And we're no longer just talking about a technology that gives access to like anyone with a brokerage account in a given country, but rather we've now got an internet native piece of infrastructure that can give access to like anybody that's you know, got an internet connection, really anybody that's got a smartphone. And that sort of potential for like scale and reach and efficiency and disintermediation, I think is going to be incredibly powerful. And the number of people that you can potentially get products and services in front of, I think is going to be exponentially higher in the future.
Man, you couldn't have really, I mean, said it better. I think that gets to the core of what, you know, a lot of these efforts are with these Web3 initiatives and Web3 companies, being able to get folks all around the world, the 8 billion people and quickly growing the people all around the world. In fact, the demographics in some of the emerging markets and the developing markets are astronomically growing quicker than the developed worlds over here in the West and yep. all that kind of stuff. So that's one thing. I mean, there's a huge economy that we need to be able to interact with, essentially, mm-hmm. And give them the same tools and resources that have helped us have this incredibly developed world with lending and borrowing and access to capital and all these really amazing things that, you know, right now a lot of the world doesn't really have for one reason or another. I think a lot of it is regulation and stuff like that. And so crypto and blockchain blows the doors open off that. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious how WisdomTree thinks about interacting with, for instance, you know, customers, right? Would they be your customers? Would you be a broker? I mean, I know a lot of this stuff is still being fleshed out, but like, mm-hmm. you know, how do we think about banking the unbanked? with a system that WisdomTree Prime is building?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there's a couple of things you've hit on here, but a lot of it relates, I think, to sort of efficiency and stability of the infrastructure that we're working with, right? The financial system right now in even the most developed parts of the world has been built on top of itself for better part of a century, right? Do you know why it's called a wire transfer? Because it used to be done by telegram.
Oh.
Right. That's what Western Union used to be. It was a telegram company that worked out that if you could, you could send a message via Morse code down a telegram and have pots of money at each end, that's how people sent it, right? Deposit at one end, they hand it out from the pile at the other. It's still called a wire today, right? Based on us sending telegrams around. And so it's just an anecdote to say that like we've been building this thing incrementally for a very long time. And as a result, there's a lot of parties involved and there are a lot of choke points in the system that make it kind of very, relatively inefficient versus I think what we could get to if we kind of have a first principles approach to doing things. And I think the reason that we get a lot of people boxed out, you mentioned like banking the unbanked, but the reason that people, don't get access to financial services, estimates from the Treasury, by the way, like 20% of the US population is underserved by the existing system.
Oh, wow.
And I think it's really just because of these like inefficiencies. It ends up being very complicated, very expensive to service sort of low value clients. And so not through kind of malice of the companies involved right now, but just because of the nature of the ecosystem and the costs that come along with it, it ends up not being profitable to serve them. And at the end of the day, they are businesses and they're there to make money. So, I think by smoothing a lot of this out, it will just lower these barriers to entry, lower the cost of serving these people, allowing them access to it. I think that's really, really powerful. And, when you talk internationally, those choke points or market inefficiencies become even more kind of acute. The one I love to talk about is, or the example I like to use is El Salvador, where it's like 40%, it's like 30-ish percent of their GDP comes from like cross-border remittance, which is primarily people working in the US sending money home, right? Huge chunk of their GDP comes from that. Mm. Western Union makes $400 million a year off El Salvador. And this is a country where people live on a few thousand dollars a year. Like that's a huge chunk of just like cross-border payment revenue that's taken out from those people. If we can drop that down by, again, just, and their role in the system is just to sit between essentially two banks in each places and send messages, right? That's what
might be why El Salvador has really got the pedal to the metal on Bitcoin.
Absolutely. And the idea that these guys wanted to move into this technology space to kind of, make it accretive for their people just to keep that money for themselves. Like that seems pretty obvious to me. And so I think, as we say, an internet native way of doing these things without requiring someone in the middle is going to be really efficient for these people and allow them much, much better access.
Yeah. No, awesome. Well, tell us, what exactly outside of the ETFs that WisdomTree has, outside of any of that, what are you working on at WisdomTree Prime that you're really excited about that is going to turn the crypto industry upside down?
Look, we've got a big, big focus of two things. We want to bring mainstream assets on chain. So this is about tokenization. Real world assets is the way people kind of talk about this, but I just talk about bringing traditional assets on chain so that we can normalize the experience with the new asset class, the new way of dealing things. So we have a tokenization platform where we've tokenized, I think it's 11 now, 40 Act mutual funds. So a US focus to start with, covering all the asset classes. So equities, bonds, money market funds, et cetera, in order to allow people to utilize this infrastructure to hold, move this value around. Mm-hmm. And we're then making WisdomTree Prime, which is our direct-to-consumer application that allows people to easily, in a familiar way, no seed phrases, no private keys, no browser extensions, this sort of stuff, to sort of hold and interact with these tokenized exposures, right? So day one, it looks very similar to sort of a fund app or an investing app that you might have that will have both like, traditional exposures, funds. We've got some asset allocation products as well as crypto, all sitting next to each other, all sort of acting in a standardized way, which I think is a pretty unique thing. Like the idea that we can collapse what's probably two or three apps in your phone today into one, I think is really powerful and allow these things to operate in a similar manner. Try to connect all of this to like daily financial services that people need. So you know, we've got banking partners. So there's a debit card attached to this. You can get an ACH and account routing number if you want to get your salary deposited. And then working very heavily on connecting this product to the wider digital asset ecosystem, right? To allow value to move in and out of us sort of seamlessly, quickly, with finality. And as we see that ecosystem grow, we know that like the digital asset ecosystem is still relatively nascent. We see people trying to bring interesting, innovative products from sort of trading solutions to sort of consumer loans and everything in between on chain. And I'm a huge believer that, you know, if we can connect this ecosystem and not have walls up around our product, but allow people to like seamlessly move it from one service to another, that they're just going to have a much easier life, you know, managing their financial matters.
Yeah, one of the things that I've noticed is that a lot of the TradFi players that were involved with the various Bitcoin spot ETFs that were just approved are all showing interest in tokenization and RWAs now. Mm-hmm. And that kind of like begs the question, because every time we have a podcast like this, Bryce, it feels like the topic of RWAs and tokenization just keeps coming up.
Yeah.
And so my question here, you know, why are all of the big, you know, TradFi institutional players like yourself interested in the tokenization and RWA space, but also like, what are the main benefits when it comes to tokenization?
Yeah, why are all the cool kids doing it?
How do we get into the cool club?
So look, this is something we've been working on for a long time. I think a lot of it tends to come down to like efficiency, transferability, and liquidity. These are like the three big high-level topics that people talk about this. Now, like to really reach the full potential, we talk about it like at scale after we get, you know, the next couple of $1 trillion sort of flow into the space. But, you know, if you look at markets today, they are heavily intermediated. And again, it's simply because we've been building a system on top of itself for the better part of 100 years. If you invest in an ETF today, which is nominally the most efficient way for you to go about your investment exposure, they estimate between like an advised investment, there's about 4% taken out in the US or Europe and one of the developed markets. So by the time you pay your advisor, you pay the ETF fee, at some point you will have traded that ETF. So you've probably got a broker in the middle as well. They faced off against a market maker or a bank who faces off against an exchange that has a clearing house underneath it. There'll be a market maker on the other side who will have gone and bought who will have subscribed to the ETF from the issuer, which will result in new shares getting created. And that ETF issuer will have a portfolio manager that's gone out to another broker to buy those underlying stocks. Right, everybody in that chain gets paid. And it all exists for a reason. And markets have been getting more and more efficient over the years. But a lot of it really is around like who's got access to which part of the system and how do we reconcile one piece against the other. The big reason that like people are looking at this space is we can see the benefits for efficiency, the ability for these things to move around natively. We can, you know, drive down the number of people that are required to do the same thing. Again, that's just money back to the end investor. I think also reach is a huge one, right? We, you know, again, this is internet native technology. The number of people that you can get to, the way in which you can get to them is, you know, I think just going to have a much greater scale capacity than what we've seen in markets today. Right now, if you're a product creator in financial services, you have to enter every single market discreetly that all have their own technology stack, set of service providers and intermediaries that you need to deal with. That is a very laborious process. That's not going away overnight, right? Like, you know, these systems tend to exist side by side, or, you know, it takes time for them to transition, but the potential to, you know, drive down the complications associated with that is huge. And so I think the fact that these guys are looking at it is starting to become obvious. We've been here for a few years now. but, you know, as people are, it's become obvious that this isn't going anywhere. And so more and more people are coming to play.
Yeah. It's so fascinating. All those things that you mentioned, just about increasing the efficiencies across businesses. It reminds me a lot of the hype surrounding AI right now. I mean, think about all the efficiencies that a business gets by incorporating AI, helping people do tasks, you know, 10 times faster, et cetera. Even the things that we haven't even like thought up, you know, their AI is going to be doing so much more than we could even imagine right now. It's going to be even coding itself and auditing its own code. It's going to be crazy. But there are similar efficiencies, I think, that you know, blockchain is unlocking here, as you've described, in the capital markets. And so I could see, you know, of course, the main narrative in this bull market for stocks and stuff is like AI, right? Like that's the underlying driver of GDP growth and all that kind of stuff. Do you think in the next bull market, blockchain or tokenization might be that underlying driver? Like the economics of it could actually be that substantial?
Look, I potentially, absolutely. I think that we don't quite know what the business models are yet that are going to do that, right? I think we're still quite early with this as a technology. I make tons of internet analogies when I do this kind of stuff, right? And sure. But I think it's a really, really sort of apt one in that, you know, the internet comes along, we're in 98. you don't know like what Netflix, you didn't know that Netflix was going to be what it is. We didn't know that streaming was going to completely disrupt, you know, media, but it ended up doing it. That was a new emergent business model as a result of, you know, that information sharing technology. You know, what we have here is a technology that it is for financial services. And, you know, we're going to see the business models evolve as you get more reach, more scale, more and more consumers coming in.
Absolutely. So when you're looking at, you know, different assets and different things that are inside of the WisdomTree Prime app, you know, how do you determine what you want to tokenize? Because there's so many different assets that can be tokenized out there, whether you're looking at gold or bonds or equities or any other kind of traditional asset, whatever that may be. When you're like narrowing it down, what does it kind of come down to?
So I think that over time, it's going to be everything, right? But where we start is what we think is most usable for people day one, right? So the building blocks for people's portfolios, big market equities, bonds, money market funds for savings products, I think are really, really powerful as well. so that's really where we start. But I see the potential for this to kind of be everything. And that would be, you know, the investment asset classes, things like loans, your mortgage, your house debt, value, things that are value and unique to you. Mm-hmm. This might also include things like your credit score. Tokenization has a potential for anything that you has value to you that you want control of, that you want more transferability, more transparency. Blockchain and tokenization are great for that. I think the one thing that is kind of pretty known is once you get into and understand the nuances of the technology, interacting with value in the tokenized world, in the digital asset world, is way better than it is in the traditional finance world. And people want to live more of their financial lives in that space once they get in at all. Moving value from like a MetaMask to Coinbase is way easier than moving it from bank to bank. And so the more that we can put in there, the more control people have and the better it will be. So I think it will be everything over time, but we start with what they want most right now, which is like the big chunk of their investments.
Totally. It's one of those things that I'm seeing. It's pretty incredible with how investments are really merging with culture as well and lifestyle, particularly just these NFTs, for instance, or meme coins even. And, you know, is it gambling? Is it investing? All that kind of stuff. Who's to say? Probably more gambling and more collecting than it is actual investing if you're referencing NFTs and meme coins. But there's still a big market for gambling and for meme coins. There's still billions of dollars of value that people ascribe to and all that kind of stuff. And so, for instance, like Coinbase, they have a prime brokerage, prime services. They've got exchanges. They've got OTC, institutional stuff. But they also have Base. And Base is this Wild West world that, you know, they allow meme coins and NFTs and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I guess my question to you is does WisdomTree see a future or anything like that where on WisdomTree Prime, people can hold their NFTs, people can have a self-custodial wallet where they could hold their meme coins and any tokens that they want that they deem, you know, is their right to hold and trade and all that stuff?
Yeah, so I think there's potential for sort of all of this to kind of come together. Definitely where we're starting is trying to bring like the regulated financial services end of things into you know, into this blockchain environment. We want to make sure mm-hmm. that this stuff is like through the front door, that it's accepted, that people have protections, right? Not all regulation that's in existence is implemented in an optimal way, but like the principle for why it's there is great. We don't want to see people getting like missold complicated products. There's a long history of these things happening and this stuff is there for a reason. But, you know, trying to bring these on chain, I just think expands the universe for what people have got. Where it ends up in terms of, you know, what the demand for like collectibles and things like that are, like, you know, plenty of people love baseball cards and Pokemon cards and this kind of stuff. NFTs are very similar and that's got a lot of value and adds a lot of utility to people. And so I think the ability to kind of bring it together into one place is a worthwhile endeavor. We'll need to see where that market settles. We're definitely starting at kind of the other end, but I do see a future sure. where all of this ends up in one place.
Yeah. I mean, which blockchains do you think is going to support this kind of infrastructure? We see a lot of different groups looking at the space of tokenization and bringing these assets on. I mean, just recently we saw BlackRock, right, with the Biddle Fund. And mm-hmm. the thing that surprised me there is that instead of maybe building their own layer one or building their own blockchain, they said, no, we're going to do this on Ethereum. So do you think that that sets like the precedent? Do you think that that sets the standard for other groups to come in and maybe use Ethereum? Or do you think that there's a place for maybe other things, whether that's like Avalanche or Solana or another competitor that's out there?
Or maybe even the question is better posed as private blockchains versus public blockchains, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, do you think that there's a room for both maybe?
Yes. So I think that's the right framing, right? I tend to use permission versus, you know, publicly available rather than private, because you can obviously, you know, carve out a section sure. on a blockchain that requires permissioning. I'm very big on public blockchains. I think the innovation that we've seen in that space is massive. I am also a big believer in like that there will be a multi-chain future. Like, I don't think what we've got now, there's probably too many, and maybe the ones that are going to live, you know, aren't in existence today. We're still in a very early innovative sort of phase of this, but I do think that like there's going to be different chains for different use cases, right? Like the transaction, if you want to do a retail application that's based all on chain, the transactional costs associated with Ethereum when it gets, it's just not going to work. But for high value transactions, if you're doing $5 million minimum clips, which is what the BlackRock fund is, what's $200 of transaction costs in that, right? It ends up being much smaller. So high value things, your property deed going on Ethereum mainnet, probably not a big deal. But if you try and pay for a cup of coffee, it's not very economical, right? So I think when I think about this, I'm very, very focused on like, what's the use case? What is the, like, what are the characteristics of the blockchain that we need to make that work? And then let's get the best solution for that. From our perspective, you know, we've been working with kind of several guys. We do a lot with Stellar. We work with Avalanche. We're going to do plenty on Ethereum as well. And it really is about like, what's the use case? Where does the value get added? And therefore, what characteristics do we need?
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. Love it. Now, when we talk about, you know, kind of some of this innovation that's coming on, you know, a lot of it's actually starting to come back onto Bitcoin, which is cool to see mm-hmm. with ordinals and runes. And so, you know, I definitely don't want to slight Bitcoin. And of course, I think Bitcoin's gotten the butt of a lot of jokes with how slow it moves and all that kind of stuff, but it serves its role. But we can't deny the fact that there's like capital forming on other chains, on other ecosystems. There's interest. All that kind of stuff. And Brendan mentioned a couple with Solana and Avalanche and Polygon, all this kind of stuff. And we're not going to ask you to choose the winners and give us your crystal ball, like, you know, which is going to be the best one and stuff. But I guess my question is like, you know, the next ETF, for instance, mm-hmm. That might come to play, people are speculating. I think WisdomTree actually even has an ETF application out for the Ethereum ETF. Mm-hmm. And so the logical sort of next step you hear, you see, and even Larry Fink said, like, the BlackRock Bitcoin ETF is the first step into tokenization and like mm-hmm. asset token, like bringing these crypto assets into ETFs and stuff. So, like, do you see a world in which like there's many crypto ETFs, and would WisdomTree Prime be a place that people could hold their ETFs? Is WisdomTree, you know, going to issue more ETFs, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So, look, I think there's a couple of points in there, right? So on the ETF front, I think people will continue to launch, you know, whatever they see demand for and what they can, what they're going to be allowed to do by the regulator. And there's a Venn diagram there, and you know, you'll continue to see issuers put out, you know, whatever they're able to in that space. They've obviously proved to be popular. The asset class has demand. People want access. So I think they're kind of undeniable facts. It tends to come, in my experience, like it'll go down the market cap table. That's really how these things come into existence. So, you know, Bitcoin is first, Ethereum is likely to be second, and we'll see where it kind of goes from there. I think with WisdomTree Prime, it's really more about providing an alternative way to get exposure to these. So Bitcoin and Ethereum are both available in WisdomTree Prime today. And, you know, as we see demand, we'll continue to expand the access. This is done in a like more direct way through WisdomTree Prime. So it's not the ETF itself, but, you know, we tokenized Bitcoin and made that available inside the tokenized platform. And so, you know, we're really about providing access to as many exposures as we possibly can down all the routes that make sense for our client base, whether that be the tokenized form through WisdomTree Prime or through the traditional wrapper in the ETFs. I think this idea of like providing the widest possible access to the widest possible set of assets is incredibly powerful and puts a lot of, you know, control and power back in the investor hands.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that we were talking about right before we started off the pod was just about on-ramping the next generation. And I think there's a lot of people, it's not just, you know, the older generations. There's a lot of people everywhere that look at crypto and they say, you know, I don't fully understand it. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if I want to get into it. You know, what do you think is the best way to on-ramp those people? Because this is starting to go beyond just cryptocurrency, right? I mean, we're talking about all the different use cases that can kind of be associated with it. So like, what is the easiest, most seamless way to onboard everyone in like the next stages? You know, there's always that 2030 number that it's talking about onboarding a billion people by 2030. Like, how do we do that effectively?
Look, this might seem, you know, speaking to my own area, but I honestly believe it's by building good product on top of this technology. Build good user experiences, build things people want, or build something that is an order of magnitude better than what they get today. And I truly believe that this technology has the power to really do that for financial services. And I also don't really think most people need to understand how blockchain works in order to take advantage of it. If you've got a good user experience that abstracts away all the sharp edges of it, they should never know that it's a token, not a share, that underlies. Nobody knows how the technology for an exchange works. No one understands a CSD. Find me anyone that can, you know, any person that doesn't work in the space that can explain fixed messaging or the Swift network or anything like that.
Right.
They have no need to, but all of those things power your brokerage and your bank today. You just don't need to know it. What you need to know is that, you know, you've got your value there, that it was easy to transfer it around, that you've got 24-hour access to it, and that you've, you know, got control and understanding of your money and that it's working for you. And I think we can make products and user experiences that are just better than what exists today by using this technology to kind of the full potential and by iterating the business models by removing intermediaries. And so how do we get the next billion people on? Well, I think they show up without knowing that they actually are in a blockchain enabled space.
I love that.
I think that goes for all spaces, right? I mean, like when we look at bringing people onto crypto, you know, I've always been a big advocate of Web3 and decentralized gaming. And the conversations that I've had with people is we need to create a good game, a good product, a good service first. Because if that's not there, then why should they care in the first place? Like, You can't even get someone to play a bad game that is coming from a traditional method. Mm-hmm. You know, why are they going to care if there is blockchain involved unless the underlying product or service or game, or you fill in the blank there, whatever it is, unless that is good and is going to impact and improve their life first. And if that happens, then I completely agree with you. You know, the people will just naturally come afterwards. So I just wanted to echo that point. It stood out to me and I thought it was a killer response.
Yeah, build it and they will come.
Absolutely.
Jason, I want to know actually kind of along those same lines in kind of in closing, what other products, or I guess I should say from your product viewpoint, what other companies or ecosystems are out there that are doing a really good job of user experience, user interface, that you think is probably worth it for our listeners to check out?
Look, it's a really good question. The space is pretty nascent and people are doing, we're trying to cut the industry in a lot of different ways. You guys have referenced Base a few times. I think what Coinbase is trying to do is really interesting, and they are trying to push the envelope a little in terms of like what a browser-based wallet extension and integrating with the mobile app. I like that interplay. I think that that's clever, and I do like the commitment from the company that they're pushing things, that they are trying to push more and more on-chain despite, you know, what their traditional business is. So that's been really impressive to see. I think the guys at Republic, you know, trying to integrate tokenized wallets into their sort of crowdfunding offering and early stage venture has been a really interesting use case for that as well. From like more the technology sort of side of things, there are, you know, a handful of people that are doing interesting things to make the space, I think, more accessible and more usable without kind of calling out anyone specifically. I'm paying very close attention to what people are doing around kind of more privacy preserving transactions and how we can push that down on chain. Not to say that that's a user experience in and of itself, but I think the ability to build better kind of connectivity peer-to-peer experiences around that is going to be really important. So I'm on the lookout for that kind of stuff as well.
Awesome. Well, hey, Jason, this was awesome, man. Incredibly informative, and we're super excited to check out Wisdom Tree Prime. Can you give us any intel on where to, you know, kind of stay apprised of everything going on? Any website, social media? Are you guys on Discord? How do you guys operate?
Absolutely. So look, wisdomtreeprime.com. If you want to go check out the website, we're available in the App Store for both Apple and Google in 34 states currently, and we're pushing hard to get all the licenses up for the rest of them. So hopefully we're nationwide soon. If you're looking for announcements, our website, follow us on socials, Wisdom Tree Prime's account. You can find me at Guthrie Phi on Twitter as well. These are normally the best ways to stay up to date, and we're pushing updates sort of every month, every other week.
I love it. Hey, well, next time there's another big announcement or partnership or whatever, you guys come back on and we'll have another roundtable discussion here on the Crypto 101 podcast. This was super awesome, and we appreciate your insight and your time today.
No, absolutely, guys. This was really great. Thanks for having me.
Cool. Take care. To all you Crypto 101 listeners at home, we always appreciate your time. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you back same time, same place next week.
Save big this holiday season, all in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
At
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.